In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Today we celebrate the feast day of one of the early martyrs of the Church. He was the Bishop of Benevento in central Italy, and he was martyred by being thrown to the bears. His name was Saint Januarius. And a relic of his blood, a vial of his blood, was preserved by the Church as a first-class relic. Remember what a first-class relic is. It is part of the body of the saint. It could be a lock of hair. It could be blood. You know, the relics, the central relics of Pope Saint John Paul II are blood, because he gave blood for medical purposes, and they preserved it. And guess what? We saw those relics at the recent Knights in Columbus Supreme Convention in St. Louis, which was really cool. And I thought about how to acquire them and decided that the security was too tight. But in any case, this vial of blood is kept in Naples. The relics tend to get acquired by more powerful dioceses. And on this day and other days throughout the year, it is, in general, it liquefies. It's solid. But on this day, it turns liquid. No scientific explanation for it at this point, so it's a miracle. And the belief is that when it doesn't liquefy, bad things are in store. So guess what? It didn't liquefy this year. So say a few extra prayers. And you may have heard St. Januarius referred to as St. Gennaro. And in Italian-American communities throughout the country today, we have St. Gennaro festivals. You know, if you were in Little Italy in New York, oh boy. Or in Boston, you know, any place with an Italian Little Italy, you would have a St. Gennaro festival today. In the first reading today from St. Paul to St. Timothy, St. Paul tells us about the requirements for being a bishop. And it says, "Beloved, the saying is trustworthy, who as ever aspires to the office of bishop, aspires to a noble task. And having known more than a few bishops, and knowing the work that they have to do and the things that they have to put up with, I would change this to, he who aspires to be a bishop is a raving lunatic." Because, you know, we think about them, have the cool threads, and you call them Your Excellency and all of these things. But it's really a very hard job. And so that's one of the reasons why, even if we have an imperfect bishop, and I'm not saying Bishop Solis is imperfect, don't get me wrong, don't call the diocese, but even if any given bishop doesn't measure up to your standards, pray for them, because really it's a very difficult job. And because of this, St. Paul puts out a list of things for St. Timothy to consider when he's appointing bishops in his territory. You know, they have to be temperate, self-controlled, decent, hospitable, able to teach, not a drunkard, not aggressive, but gentle, not contentious, not a lover of money. You can see all of these things. Then you come to something. The bishop must manage his children well. He can only have been married once. You say, wait a minute, bishops aren't married, they shouldn't have children. Well, you know, some of our Protestant friends would say, well, see, this is why priests and bishops should be married. St. Paul said so. That's not what he said. You've got to remember, this was a different time. Just about everyone was a convert to the faith. And so if just about everyone's a convert, you know, and just about everyone got married at that time, you would have a very small pool to draw upon if you only appointed celibates to be bishops. And so, because they were converts, they could only have been married once, and that also applied to, you know, their wife dying and then remarried. Couldn't be made a bishop. And if they had children from before, they had to, you know, the children couldn't be scandalous. Which brings, you know, me to mind an old saying among the Greek Orthodox who have married priests, that the priest's son is the devil's grandson. Or, you know, you talk to your Protestant friends about preachers' kids. And I can see that in my own family, hearing what my grandmother and her brother and sister had to go through as the children of a Mormon bishop. Very difficult. It's also interesting to note that in the early church, Even if a bishop was, quote-unquote, married, he was expected to observe continence, which meant he was to act as if he wasn't married sexually. And how do we know this? Because if a bishop and his wife had a child, he was degraded from the episcopacy, you know, after he was made a bishop. And this was also expected of the priests, that they also would be exercise constancy. And if they had children, again, after their ordination, they were kicked out. This is also why in the Eastern Catholic churches and in the Eastern Orthodox churches, largely you do not have daily mass. Say, why is that? Because they have to fast from sexual relations for a certain number of days before they can celebrate the sacred liturgy. So it's a far more complicated thing than most people think. And it's also good to remember that, like our permanent deacons in the Eastern churches, married priests, you know, there's no such thing as a married man being ordained a priest. They have to be married before they're ordained. And if their wife dies, they cannot remarry. It's the same thing that's applied to our permanent deacons. And anyone who thinks that married clergy would be the solution to the problems of vocations in the Catholic Church had best talk to some Greeks and to some Protestants and find out that it is just exchanging one set of problems for another. And also it will be betrayal of the tradition of the Latin Church, which is founded on apostolic teaching. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit.